Good morning, this is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inge, who returns tomorrow. During this hour of Focus 580, we'll be talking about computer technology, a variety of issues that pertain to using computers, technology that is coming down the pike, and how they may affect us, those people who use computers. Our guest for the hour is Graham Gibson. He is president of Computer Training Corporation around the Kansas City area. Computer Training Corporation provides a variety of professional training and tutoring services around Kansas City and Independence, Missouri, and also operates a bulletin board system and internet service provider, Home BBS and Home ISP. He joins us every once in a while by telephone to take your questions about using computers and a variety of other issues, security, wireless, things that we will be dealing with or are dealing with as consumers in the computer realm. The point of this program is to answer your questions, so if you'd like to join the conversation, all you need do is call us. Around Champaign-Urbana, the phone number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL, if that makes it easier to remember. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us, 800-222-9455. Again, around Champaign-Urbana, anytime during this hour, you can call us at 333-WILL. Toll-free elsewhere, 800-222-WILL. Graham Gibson, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you, Jack?
Doing fine. Thanks once again for joining us.
My pleasure.
Maybe to start the conversation, we could talk about some of the things that I know you are interested in, and I think a lot of people as well, in the computer realm, and one of those is wireless.
Certainly. It's emerging as one of the leading technologies to allow people to escape the onerous charges of the telephone network.
Right.
You know, the telephone network has always been designed on the concept of you pay for distance and you pay for time. And the mentality of the telephone companies is kind of stuck in that mold. They always want you somehow or another to pay for distance and time. And the internet is designed for one charge to gain access, basically full time, and over any distance. And so the wireless option gives you the ability to bypass the telephone company as a delivery mechanism. You don't have to use their wires for high-speed DSL, and you also don't have to use the wires of the other entity that can get you high-speed connections, the cable company.
Mm-hmm.
Now, cable is actually a good, fast, reliable, and inexpensive mechanism to get high-speed internet for individuals at home. In the price class of a home user who's just using casual amounts, who also takes cable service, it's a good deal. But when you start looking at from the standpoint of business, it starts breaking down fairly badly, because cable delivery of broadband is basically putting you on a party line. You're on the same network, essentially, that everybody else is on, and unless you take specific precautions, you can find yourself with people browsing your machine that you think are just your neighbors.
Right. We can talk more about that, certainly, and I want to ask you a couple questions about cable, because I have a cable modem at home as well, actually, and I'm not running a business. But anyway, in terms of wireless, then, if not the phone companies and the cable companies, who will be providing?
Primarily the ISPs. As a matter of fact, a new set of initials has developed, WISP, for Wireless Internet Service Provider, and currently there are about 755 of these companies out there covering the broad spectrum of the U.S. real estate. A wireless-based company basically puts up a POP, a point of presence, just like a telephone system POP. But instead of getting all of the phones in that particular calling area, they get all of the real estate around them for a circle of up to 5 miles radius. Some are designed on 3 mile cells, particularly in heavily populated metropolitan areas, because if you make your cell too big, then you limit the number of people that can use that particular cell. Generally speaking, 3 to 5 mile radius around the transmitter site. Here in Kansas City, for instance, we started in March of 2000 with one transmitter site around our office, and we now have nine covering close to 40% of the metro. Anybody that's in range of those transmitters can get this high-speed signal. It's beamed from our network operations center to a tiny little card that is just slightly larger than a credit card. That card actually has the capacity to receive the signals as fast as 10 megabits per second, but most people don't order internet service that fast. It's fairly expensive to get 10 meg service. A meg and a half or so, or the speed of a T1 line, that's a very popular offering. And for a business, that's anywhere from $99 to $199 a month, typically.
Uh-huh, for a T1, which is like 1.5 megabytes.
That's right. And a T1 brought in traditionally from the telephone company is typically $1,600 to $1,800 a month when the local loop is considered, which is the piece of wire that gets it from the ISP to you.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's download speed. What about upload? Is it the same?
Typically, wireless is a symmetrical service. It goes in both directions at the same speed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, that price would not include services to allow you to resell. A reseller is, of course, going to use significantly more capacity. In that case, you're probably looking at $500 to $600 a month because the reseller is going to load that pipe all the time. But for a business that's going to use it 9 to 5, then that sort of scenario, usually you can get a couple $100 price.
Okay. A couple questions about how this all works. You say that there are 755 current ISPs that are providing wireless around the country, probably growing pretty quickly.
Yes.
Now, are these independent ISPs, or are they, you know, the companies that provide, cellular telephone service? What kind of companies are these?
The cellular telephone operators do have a way to bring internet to you, usually through the cell phone, but it's very slow. Typically, a speed of 19.2 kbits per second, which is roughly a third the speed of a typical dial-up modem.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So the cellular companies are not really getting this technology. It's the ISPs that are making it happen right now. Now, what will happen is the same sort of thing that happened in the early days of cellular. Originally there were 50 or 60 cellular operators out there, and then they started pooling together and growing and building national networks. And that will happen with the wireless industry, too. But at the moment, wireless is a local phenomenon. And you put up a transmitter and you get the local real estate around you. And until that infrastructure is built out somewhat more substantially, I don't suspect that we'll see many national networks.
Yeah.
It's our plan here in Kansas City to build our system out to 50 transmitter sites by 2003, which will cover the metropolitan area entirely. And then we have an alliance program called the Air Corps Alliance that allows other wireless operators to share our POPs and allows their clients to roam through our network, and also allows the sharing of frequency information, because most of this wireless information is based on a unlicensed piece of spectrum that's called the 2.4 gigahertz spectrum. This spectrum was available because it is the same frequency in which microwave ovens operate, so nobody wanted to pay a large chunk of money for a piece of spectrum that could be interfered with by anybody's microwave oven. Consequently, the spectrum has been set aside for industrial, scientific, and medical use, and these wireless transmitters are one of the many uses for that spectrum. We have gotten very good at making the transmission distances increase rather substantially.
Mm-hmm.
When the technology was originally established, based on a specification called the 802.11 spec, the distance involved in receiver to transmitter was on the order of 450 feet. We now have these radios operating as far as 11 miles. So we've taken that original technology and pushed it out quite a bit. Although the practical working distance, as I said, is typically 3 to 5 miles.
Okay. Now, given that you're using part of the electromagnetic spectrum, you said 2.4 gigahertz or something like that, to send these packets over the air, is the bandwidth available in this region enough to serve, for example, everyone? I mean, or are there limitations on the number of people who can get wireless?
Right. There are limitations in the number of people that can get it. Yeah. And typically, a single wireless transmitter site can handle a maximum of 96 customers. Now, the solution to the problem of, well, what do you do when the 97th customer comes along, is you crank down the power of that station so that you are only serving the 96. And you pick up that other person in a new transmitter station that you build near them. So by building more and more cells and then reducing the power transmitted to those cells, you get eventually to the point where perhaps your 96 customers are in one apartment building.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly would be the case in very dense areas like New York City with a population density of 23,000 people per square mile.
Sure.
The closest urban center to you, the population density is about 2,300 people per square mile. But in Kansas City, it's only about 300 people per square mile. We have a very geographically dispersed city. And so because of that, it's a wonderful technology for here. And for medium to light density areas, wireless is a perfect solution because the number of customers that are available from each telephone wire center makes it very difficult to recap the investment involved in installing DSL,
mm-hmm.
which is why DSL deployment has been very slow in lightly populated areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, it also would seem that wireless internet broadband access would help a lot of the rural areas a lot more.
Certainly, and there are a number of companies that are developing to service that market. In the Kansas City area, there's a company called KNET that is currently servicing communities like Baldwin, Kansas, with a population of about 20,000. That kind of population density works reasonably well for a single wireless transmitter in a town. Then there's a company out of Iowa called Prairie iNet that is also developing this technology, and a third company called InvisiBand that is also developing technology to service the rural market. So there are a number of companies that are forming to service that rural marketplace. It actually is easier to service a rural marketplace wireless than it is to service a major metroplex because the cell size is well suited for a small town compared to doing a large area. In Kansas City, I have 96 square miles to cover. And so the number of transmitters that I need is significantly greater than the number of transmitters that would be needed, say, for Emporia, Kansas, or a town like Springfield in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. I've also heard that satellite technology is being used for broadband internet access. In fact, that Hughes Corporation and some other big companies are launching these satellites from a ship in the ocean off the equator to reduce the launch costs to put up these broadband satellites.
That's true.
Yeah.
And one of the things that's happening right now to solve the satellite problem, which is a problem of time, when you are working with a satellite, you have the distance up to the satellite and then the distance back down. This time that it takes to get the signal back and forth is called latency. And for a transmission to a geosynchronous satellite, one that stays over the as the orbit progresses, that time lag is almost a half of a second. And that's the problem with satellite technology today. When you click on a link on a web page, waiting half a second seems like forever in human terms. It just doesn't seem to respond very quickly. When it does respond, it's fairly quick. But there are a couple of issues there. One is the total capacity of the satellite. The Hughes satellite, for instance, that's currently servicing North America, has a total capacity of 16 megabytes. It can't do more than that in total bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if you're getting your 256K chunk of that download speed, when the total capacity hits 16 megs of everybody using it, you start slowing down, just as cable in with the 400 people surrounding you getting served by the same fiber feed, when they all get on, well, use can suddenly slow down quite a bit too. So that's a bit of an issue. And what they're trying to do with these new satellites is load a low Earth orbit instead of 23,000 miles up, a couple of thousand miles up, that will have a much faster response time. But satellites in that orbit don't stay over you. They have to be moving very quickly in order to maintain orbit. And so you need a lot of those satellites and a meshed network to make them work. And that's technology that's just now emerging. It holds promise. I certainly hope that will be a solution. But from the standpoint of a metro network, terrestrial fixed wireless still is working quite a bit better.
Yeah. Well, with all these different options, you know, you've got DSL, cable modems, traditional, phone modems, wireless satellite. I mean, how does a consumer find their way through this thicket to make good choices about how they're going to access the Internet?
Well, basically, it's a question of how fast do I have to connect? Do I have to connect all the time? And also, how secure does my transmission have to be? A dial-up modem is an excellent solution for a lot of people. I mean, if you're just doing a little email or an occasional research paper or things like that, paying less than $20 a month to get on the Internet's not a bad deal, particularly considering that you basically can stay on all day and all night with most service providers for that $20, which quite frankly, if you do that, they're paying you to be a customer. Internet service providers look to have anywhere between 7 to 10 people using the same phone line. And since commercial rates for phone lines run in the order of $30 to $40 a month, if you're on that line 24/7, that provider's paying you to be a customer. So dial-up is really quite a good offering if you are a casual user. Now, when you're a little bit more involved, you say have multiple machines, you're running a home office, something like that, or you're having to be connected to the net all the time, then some form of DSL or wireless makes sense if you're in business. And if you're a home user, cable makes sense. Now, the precaution that the home users with cable have to take is to make sure that they do not have file and print sharing turned on and bound to the TCP/IP protocol. I know that's a mouthful, so let me see if I can make
sure.
It a little simpler. TCP/IP, Transmission Control Protocol, Internet Protocol, is the set of rules that makes the Internet work. Without that set of rules, not the first piece of email would occur. No one could see a web page. It basically says how the signals are going to be routed from one computer to another. In that set of rules, there are choices that you can make on your computer. You get to them by going to Network Neighborhood, right-clicking on it, and going to Properties. And then selecting under the TCP/IP protocol, Bindings, and under that, you should only have client for Microsoft Networks checked off of your Windows machine, and not have checked file and print sharing. Because if you have that checked, then somebody that's a neighbor, you know, six blocks away, could be browsing your machine and reading your files, which just really isn't a very good idea at all.
Right.
And they may not even know that they're doing something wrong. They're just drilling down on stuff that they think is on their machine. So it may not even be something nefarious, but you still don't want to have them know what your Quicken figures are. So that's a precaution that everybody that's using cable modem should take. The other solution is to get a personal firewall. There are a number of very good personal firewalls out there. I like Black Ice Defender. It does a superb job for the handling security for people that don't know a lot about security.
Now, this is a hardware firewall?
No, that's a software firewall.
Okay.
If you just go to a search engine and put in Black Ice, it'll take you to their website.
Okay. A couple other questions. I'll follow up on that. But we're actually approaching our midway point in the program already, and I want to reintroduce our guest. We're talking this morning during this hour of Focus 580 with Graham Gibson. He's president of Computer Training Corporation of Kansas City. He also operates Home ISP and Home BBS, internet service provider in the Kansas City area. And we're talking about a variety of issues pertaining to computers, internet access, using both. And questions are welcome if you'd like to join us. 333-9455. That's around Champaign-Urbana. Anywhere else, 800-222-9455. We'd welcome your questions as well. But I have lots of my own, so we'll forge ahead. And I mentioned hardware versus software firewall. What's the difference?
Oh, primarily cost. A software firewall usually can be had for $30 to $40.
Yeah.
Hardware firewalls sometimes are several thousand dollars.
Okay.
If you're a large business, invest in a hardware firewall. It's worth the investment. But if you're just a home user, basically you just want people on your machine, mm-hmm. and the software will do a perfectly good job at keeping the casual hacker off. It's a question of how much security do you put up. If you're a bank, you put a lot more attention into your vault than if you're just somebody that's trying to keep people from walking in the front door of your house. So use appropriate measures to protect your data. Now, the best thing that anybody can do, of course, is to have good, reliable backups. And unfortunately, there are a great many people out there that think their original source disks represent a backup, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
And hard drives have gotten so big today that backing them up on floppies is just about impossible. We're recommending to clients now that they get removable hard drives to back up their data or get a tape of some sort, because anything short of that, they just won't back up. And that's an accident waiting for a place to happen.
We have a caller waiting. Let's talk with them. This is someone on a cell phone on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Very informative program. I live out in the country about 5 miles from my internet server. I've got a 56K modem, but unfortunately I can seldom get more than...
26.4.
Yes.
Yeah. The problem is that telephone technology is severely affected by distance, and the distance that you're operating at, you're almost certain to have one or two loading coils or an amplifier in your line. And when those components are in place, you're basically stuck. There is a trick that works in some telephone dialing areas. If you order digital caller ID, the features that are associated with that sometimes force the phone company to come out and put a new interface on your house because since it's a digital service, it doesn't work very well through dirty analog phone lines. And then a month later, cancel it. They never come back and take out the old wire.
Terrific. I'll try. Could I go with a satellite and at least improve my download speeds?
Oh, absolutely. The Hughes satellite, for instance, currently uses telephone return. Your signal goes to their control center by telephone slow because, of course, you're requesting URLs and so on. And then the return speed comes back to you at either 200 or 400 kbits a second. 400K is a pretty good feed. And the service is fairly reasonable. So you can also couple it up with a satellite television receiver, killing two birds with one stone. So for somebody that's in your position right now, I think that'd probably be a good solution. Ultimately, some wireless provider will get to you.
Okay, terrific. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Just returning briefly to the issue of firewalls, I've heard from some friends of mine who kind of track this stuff that one of them has a piece of software they can actually track the people trying to hack into their computer.
Yes.
And apparently there are people out there trying to do this
all the time.
Exactly.
All the time.
just either for grins or malice or whatever.
Well, a lot of them are just looking for somebody that hasn't been careful enough to lock the door.
Yeah.
When they find a machine, they'll download its contents just to see if there's anything interesting there. A lot of times they're looking to pirate software, or a lot of times they're looking for financial data. Sometimes they're just out and out spying. Sometimes they're just being nosy. Sometimes they're just doing it because they can. It's a sad commentary on the fact that that there are a lot of people out there that seem to just have too much time on their hands.
Right.
The fact of the matter is that today anybody can be a hacker. All you need to do is go and grab some of the software that the good hackers have written so that other people that don't have any skill in that area can go and snoop on machines. And that software is widely available, unfortunately. The reasonable levels of precautions that you can take, first of all, if you don't need to be connected to the net 24/7, you don't have to have your computer on all the time. You can keep it off until, except for when you're on it. Although it's actually better for the machine to be left on, it's from a security standpoint is best to turn it off. So if you have concerns about that area, I'd get at least a personal firewall. $30 or $40 is not very much to spend in order to basically lock the door. Now, when you start getting a little bit more sophisticated have a large number of machines, you can hide behind what's called NAT addressing. NAT stands for Network Address Translation. It takes a real IP number, the Internet Protocol number that your ISP loans to you, that acts as your machine's telephone number on the network, and takes that number and translates it to a number that is not routable. Because that number is not routable, your machine cannot be browsed. So they can't come any farther than the little device that's doing the NAT translation. There's a very good one made by Linksys that's made specifically for use with cable modems, but it also works with DSL and wireless. It's about $100. You can find it at any Best Buy. It's called a cable DSL modem that has NAT translation in it. And it also does another trick called DHCP, another set of alphabet soup. DHCP stands for Dynamic Host Control Protocol, which is a mouthful, but what it means in short is that it's a machine that will hand your computer a valid address on request, so you don't have to know anything about setting the numbers of your machine. So if you get this little box, you can plug it in between your DSL or cable modem and put as many as 256 machines on your network anywhere you want, and they'll automatically respond and get the right addressing. Almost any competent computer technician can set that sort of thing up for you, and it's a good way to keep your machines from being browsed by somebody else because you're no longer at an address that they can see.
I actually got one of those a few months ago to use with my cable modem, and hooked up both my Mac and PC to this cable modem router thing, and both of them have internet access, and I didn't have to set up some kind of weird network that would try to link the Mac with the PC.
Right. They work very well.
Yeah. Well, phone calls again. I'll mention the phone number if people have questions about any of this stuff or anything else related to using computers. 333-9455. That's the Champaign Urbana number. Toll free anywhere you can hear us. 800-222-9455.
And Jack, while we're talking
about
phone numbers, I'll mention that Home ISP is a national system. We have dial-up in 1,200 cities across the United States.
Great.
And if somebody wants to find out if we have a number in your area, just go to the Home ISP website, www.homeisp.com, and hit the location button and see if we have a phone number in your area.
Well, very good. There's a lot of other good resources on your site, I noticed. You're affiliated with Project Gutenberg, for example?
Yes, we're a Project Gutenberg mirror site, and we also are we're the Two Cows affiliate in Kansas City. Two Cows is an excellent source of shareware software.
Uh-huh. Good. Well, if anybody wants that, I've got it written down as well. But homeisp.com. Very good. We have a couple of callers lining up here. We'll go next to a listener on line number four. I'm not sure what, from Cropsley, I guess. Cropsey, is that right? Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Yeah, thank you. Hey, I have a question about tape backup. For the home user or home business, is there a cheap solution out there?
Well, unfortunately, the tape backup solutions are almost as much as getting a removable hard drive, which has come to be my favorite way to do it. You can get a hard drive in a tray that'll slip into your machine and back up your entire machine. I don't know how big a drive you have, but you know, you can do a 20 gig drive on a removable tray for less than $250. And by the time you typically $179 and a bunch of tapes, you're in about the same neighborhood. The removable drive is much faster. The only thing is that if you want to have an off-site backup, you need two of them. So that might pose an additional expense, but it's a good fast way to do it. On tape, Seagate makes an excellent tape backup unit that will do either 8 or 20 gigs. And the tapes are readily available. If you check with your local computer dealer, they can set you up.
I apologize to the last caller. We were getting some really bad telephone line noise, so I had to drop that to avoid that. We have another caller we'll get right to in Champaign on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. You just answered a question about using the digital caller ID to increase your line speed. I was curious as to how much you would expect to increase if you have a 56K modem.
Well, typically, 56K modem will attach at an average working distance of 5,000 feet at about 43K. So if you're getting 43 to 45K, that I would say that's probably what your net gain is going to be.
So if I'm usually connecting around 31, I might see an increase?
Yes, you might go as high as 43 to 45.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the call. Now, these speeds, we're throwing out a lot of numbers, but they relate to quality of service in a variety of ways. For example, particularly when we talk about streaming audio and video on the Internet.
Right.
Which we're doing, and I'm involved in and so pay a lot of attention to. Our highest bandwidth stream that we're actually heard on the Internet right now on the show is 64 kilobits per second, which is, to my ear, considerably better sounding than our radio air signal on the AM band.
64K is a high-quality audio signal by wireline. It is the channel speed for an ISDN channel. And interestingly enough, almost all ISPs provide their service through an ISP calling bank that provides an ISDN connection and then drops back to the various speeds of analog as it goes. So every time you're calling in, you're basically connecting to a 64K port, and then the service backs off to whatever speed your phone line can support.
Mm-hmm.
For the chap that was called in earlier, that was 26.4, which is not really real fast. It's about 2.6K download speed. To give you an idea on wireless, we typically see 80 to 120K download speed. So there are big differences in speed when you're talking about dial-up versus any form of broadband. Broadband in general is defined as 384K and above, which makes it a quality of service good enough to handle video streaming with a full frame rate. The frame rate issue is keeping the picture from being jerky. When you have slow frame rates, you'll see a picture, but it will kind of move in steps rather than being a nice smooth picture. Regular television transmission is basically doing 30 frames a second, and so that's what you're trying to approach, is to get that 30 frame a second speed, and that's possible at speeds between 384K and a megabyte. When you get slower than that, ISDN, for instance, at 128K will do 15 frames a second, all right. Below that, single channel ISDN to a good 56K dial-up will do about 7 frames a second. And if you're on a 28.8 modem, you're lucky to do 3 frames a second.
And 7 frames per second, nobody is really going to want to spend a lot of time watching that.
No, it's, you know, it's not really terribly entertaining.
Yeah.
You need to be above 15 frames a second to have a usable picture. And almost all video conferencing, 15 frames a second is the minimum that they accept as a standard.
Good. We have another call. Let's include them in our conversation. Someone in Urbana next on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Howdy. You just mentioned Project Gutenberg.
Yes.
Could you tell me the URL that you have for that?
Yes, www.usastores.com/GDL.
www.usastores.com/GDL. GBL.
Right. Although you can go to the Home ISP webpage, there's a link there.
Yeah. And it'll link from ISP.com? Or
HomeISP.com, yes. We have an extensive system of links out to other services and resources called the Midwest Portal, and a large number of digital libraries, including the Gibson Digital Library, is there.
Would you mind if we listed that in our Project Gutenberg newsletter?
Go right ahead.
I just happened to be the founder.
Very good.
Happened to be listening while you were talking, and I didn't see that on our list of sites.
A grand service to the world. I'm glad it exists out there, and I'm happy to contribute to it.
Thanks very much. Maybe you can send me some more details for the newsletter. I'm hart@pobox.com.
All right. Actually, would work better in reverse if you would write me. I'm Graeme, G-R-A-E-M-E.
G-R-A-E-M-E. E-M-E.
At homeisp.com.
At home. ISP.com.
Right. I get about 1,000 emails a week, and it's hard enough just to follow those rather than...
Oh, I know that.
Hitting
any. Get the same thing.
Right.
I'll put a couple bangs at the front.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much for the call. Yeah, the Project Gutenberg is very interesting, very interesting resource on the web that has actually that started. I don't know if you want to say something about it, or I could have asked our caller actually, way back at the early part of this whole thing.
Yes, it was one of the very first services on, and the project has grown tremendously in scope. The first few years there were only a very limited number of texts. The Bible, some Shakespeare, a few original classic works. But now there are literally thousands of books online. And one of the unique things about the GDL is that it's designed to allow you to read all those books online rather than just allowing you to be able to download them, which is a slightly different approach. It also has links out to a great many other library resources. So for people that are interested in books and library resources, it's an excellent site. There actually are a great many library resources that are available at a service that we run called the Midwest Portal, which has links to literally thousands of other systems and other resources, news sources, and search engines and so on. And a lot of people that use our system use it as a launch page. So if people are interested in resources on the net, the Midwest Portal is a good place to start.
And what's the URL for that?
www.midwestportal.com.
Okay, good. We have another caller in our band to talk with. Let's include them. Line number one. Good morning.
Hi, it's me again.
Oh, okay, good.
Where you said I didn't mean to hang up on you.
All right.
I thought we were done, and then you said, hey, I wish he was still here. So I can tell you a couple things. We're coming up on our 30th anniversary in 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Wow.
And we're going to have about 3,600 books by then. We're going to do about 1,000 this year, just in this 1 year.
My goodness.
So we're doubling every 2 years or something, the whole size of the library. And we do about a fifth to a quarter of all the books that you can download from the internet. So they're coming up between 15 and 20,000 total that you can download. Some of them are pretty small, but some of them are pretty big.
Well, that's terrific. I'm glad that you added that to our conversation. And this is something that started right here in Champaign-Urbana.
Yeah, it did. Started at the Materials Research Lab over at the University of Illinois, July 4th, 1971.
Well, very good.
We did the Declaration of Independence kind of July 4th thing. Just kind of happened by accident.
Thematic connection there. Good.
So, yeah, we're expanding into graphics and music and a couple videos and stuff like that now that bandwidth is going up. But most of our stuff is just plain text. You can read it on any computer and any program.
Now, I have a question about the information that's out there, such as what you're describing with Project Gutenberg, and that is as technology changes, how does the accessibility of this information, how is that affected?
Well, we have sites on every continent, so it's pretty much accessible now from anywhere. It used to be that if you were trying to download one of our books down to the bottom of Chile, you were going to have trouble.
Yeah.
Lots of packets would get lost, and
yeah.
You'd have to retry and retry and retry all night, and you might get it and you might not. So that's one thing. We have dozens of sites all around the world now, and we probably add one on the average of every month. We just put up one in Greece, one in Turkey, one in Bulgaria, going all across Europe. We've got a couple in Africa, a couple in South America, Taiwan, the Scandinavian countries, England, Canada, you know, just kind of just throw a bunch of darts at a map.
Well, very good. Well, we should talk to you on another occasion.
Sure. You got my email address there.
I sure do now. Good.
Okay. Thanks.
Well, thanks so much for calling.
Uh-huh.
All right.
One of the things that's interesting about the question of downloads and one of the reasons that we maintain these mirror sites is that when you start discussing broadband speeds, the bottleneck that can occur at the network access points is rather phenomenal. Our backbone connection to the net is 100 megabits per second. If somebody else had a 100 megabit per second connection, you would think that I would be able to go and click on their link and just have it instantly. But because of the congestion that occurs in the four network access points, one near Vienna, Virginia, one in Chicago, one in San Francisco, and one in Dallas, the bottlenecks that can occur in handoff from one ISP to another are fairly phenomenal. And his comment about getting packet loss to Chile is an example of that. It really helps if you have an incredible connection to the net, and then if that connection is also echoed out at several other points, so that you can trade packets at more than just the public access points. That's called private peering, and it's one of the reasons why some ISPs are better than others. We privately peer with about 60 sites now, so that we don't have to go and hand off to the net packets that we're flowing. For instance, Sprint is located in Kansas City, and we privately peer with Sprint. So any of our traffic that is going from a customer of ours to a customer of Sprint's goes immediately to our network center here rather than going and getting kicked out to Chicago or Dallas to get there.
I see. So you go directly through their system as opposed to going through the actual backbone of the Internet?
That's right.
Yeah, good.
And by avoiding having to go to the backbone,
yeah.
You not only save money from the standpoint of transit, because the Internet service providers pay for their transit through the network access points, but you also get a much better connection, and it's much faster. The trick is to be at two equals as far as trading data, because it is very expensive for the big guy to connect to the little guy. So there's a big advantage to the little guy and a big cost to the big guy to do this. These private peering arrangements tend to only be made between the larger networks. But it is a significant factor in how fast your Internet connection is.
We just have about 3 or 4 minutes left, and if somebody wants to call real quick, we'll get them in. 333-9455, 800-222-9455. I just wanted to sort of ask, as we look ahead, we're going to be seeing a lot more wireless, a lot more satellites, a lot more wires being added to the Internet. There's this thing called Internet 2, which perhaps some people have heard about.
Yes.
And the bandwidth available is going to be increasing, I don't know, quite a bit. I'm not sure exactly how much.
Yes. There are reports and speculations out there that the that the average internet service provider will have at least 100 megabit per second connection. The larger guys will have a 1,000 megabit connection, and the typical end user will have a 5 to 10 megabit per second connection. When those kinds of connection speeds are available, basically all human information is immediately at your fingertips for the click of a button.
That has rather astonishing implications, I would say.
Yes. It will change everything, but the unfortunately, it will increase this whole question of the digital divide.
Right.
If you're not someplace where you can get that kind of connectivity or get it cost-effectively, well, then you're going to have a situation of information haves and information have-nots.
Well, this is a major issue because is there going to be enough bandwidth for everyone who wants to participate in it?
There's an ocean of bandwidth on the backbone.
Yeah.
There's fiber crisscrossing the country a dozen times over, and the amount of capacity on that fiber is absolutely staggering and going up all the time as they figure more ways to modulate it. The problem is the last mile connection. We are still basically an infrastructure of copper to the home. And until fiber or wireless leapfrogs that limitation or cable, then we're basically stuck. The good news is that the technology is marching on all the time. Just as we went from 300 baud modems to 56K modems, so too will we go from 10 megabit per second wireless connections to 100 megabit per second wireless connections. It's just a question of how fast that develops. The next wireless specification, 802.11a, is set to run at speeds of 22 megabits per second. So there are improvements on the horizon immediately. That specification has been released, and products are now starting to be manufactured under that spec.
One of the interesting things for consumers, and we just have about a minute or two left, so I'm sorry we don't have more time to explore this, is how we're going to be presented the media that's going to flow through this and how that will affect broadcasting, television, obviously a variety of other media that now will be available through an internet connection.
Well, there's going to be this great convergence of the ability to get data and a great many more program sources. But as the number of program sources go up, the credentialing of that program source goes down. One of the problems of the internet right now is that people still believe things that they see in print, and that's why a lot of these scams work. It's not a case of if you're at a news site that necessarily is a news site being held to a high journalistic standard, and so people do need to take with a grain of salt what they read and check their sources and know their facts and know their sources.
Well, that's a good place to end on, and we're here at the end of our time, so we'll have to do that. Our guest has been Graham Gibson. He's president of the Computer Training Corporation, and you can find his website. There's actually several of them, but certainly one you could start from would be www.homeisp.com or www.midwestportal.com. And you can find out a variety of connections he's got there with his own ISP and other sources on the web. And Graham Gibson, thanks once again for talking with us.
My pleasure.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.